All right, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 20, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, before we get started, we're going to do some scripture reading. We're going to pick up in the Gospel of Luke. We read chapter 1 last week. This week we'll be reading Luke chapter 2. You want to pass the board over to me, Gerard? Well, we'll just do the reading without looking at it. So here we go.
Oh, I don't have the chapter. Do I have it? I don't have it.
And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Saviour, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph, and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things, and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. And when 8 days were accomplished for the circumcising of the child, his name was called Jesus, which was so named of the angel before he was conceived in the womb. And when the days of her purification according to the law of Moses were accomplished, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that openeth the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. And to offer a sacrifice, according to that which is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. And behold, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. And the same man was just and devout, waiting for the consolation of Israel. And the Holy Ghost was upon him. And it was revealed unto him by the Holy Ghost that he should not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. And he came by the Spirit into the temple. And when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him after the custom of the law, then took he him up in his arms, and blessed God, and said, Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, according to thy word. For mine eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the Gentiles, and the glory of thy people Israel. And Joseph and his mother marveled at those things which were spoken of him. And Simeon blessed them, and said unto Mary his mother, Behold, this child is set for the fall and rising again of many in Israel, and for a sign which shall be spoken against. Yea, a sword shall pierce through thy own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. And there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Aser. She was of a great age, and had lived with an husband 7 years from her virginity, and she was a widow of about 84 years, which departed not from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And she, coming in that instant, gave thanks likewise unto the Lord, and spake of him to all them that looked for redemption in Jerusalem. And when they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord, they returned into Galilee to their own city Nazareth. And the child grew, and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. And when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them, and came to Nazareth, and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature, and in favor with God and man.
Okay, we are having some technical problems tonight, so we're going to forego what our plan was for tonight. We're reading the Jurist Handbook. And we're on part 3 of 4 parts of the handbook, but we're going to switch over to something else this evening, and we'll pick up on part 3 next week. Now, Gerard, can you hear me? Are you?
Yeah, no, I can hear you.
Okay. All right, before you, read anything, can you just give us an overview of what's going on, what you're thinking, and where you're reading from, where this information's coming from, and give us an overview or something.
Actually, what I'm reading from as I go through it is self-explanatory. I will make sure that I can't read the whole thing. I mean, I'm taking out a portion that I think is very, very compelling, but I will do an introduction and a summary, and everybody will know where it's coming from and why and everything. I mean, a lot of this you've heard bits and pieces in the news, but it's never really been explained like this before. So this really kind of puts the lid on it, so to speak, so that everybody should be able to understand what we're up against here. And that's why I felt so compelled to bring this out tonight, because it's after I read the paper, I was like, oh, wow, this has to get out, And the average person has to know this, because this is current events. This is what's affecting us right now. And this is what's going to be necessary for everybody to understand of how bad this last election was and how bad they've all been for many, many years. That's the thing. They've been playing with this stuff for a long, long time. We haven't had real elections in quite a while. And the only reason that somebody like Trump got in is because they didn't expect the flood of people to vote for him. They've been playing one for me, two for me and one for you for years. But what happened is he overwhelmed their system. And that's how he got in. And Reagan did the same thing. And they weren't quite prepared for that. So they knew in the next election when he ran for re-election that they were going to pull all stops out. And they kind of step back and let them do it, and you'll understand why, as things unfold, why they did that. Because the average person wouldn't believe this if they didn't see it themselves. And that's sort of where we're at right now. And it's a dangerous game because it's like, you know, you're messing with a stick of dynamite that the fuse is lit, and you have to grab it and cut the fuse before it hits the explosive. And that's the game we're playing right now with all this coming out. And you got compromised. Everybody's compromised. All the news media is compromised. It's like, you know, if we do this, it's going to only be by the grace of God. It's going to take a miracle to take this thing back if we can do it. It's really, really bad. Now, I have faith in God, and if it wasn't for that, I'd go crawl in a hole somewhere and wait for it to all be over or to cave in on my head or whatever. But look, it's
well,
a very...
Terry sent me a copy of the report, and what page or what focus are you going to be looking at?
Well, just real quick.
You want me to pass the board over to you? Can you?
Yeah, I'd like to share the screen as I go through this.
Let me remove my sharing button here and pass it to you. But you're able to get into the controls tonight, right?
Yeah, I was just in them, so.
Right. So let me. Stop
I should
sharing.
Be. I've had some trouble in the past where they just disappear, and hopefully I won't have that problem.
I just bailed out of the sharing board.
All right, let me get my screen share ready because I know I have to, like, pick which screen I want. Let's see.
Anyway, I see this report. It's a forensic examination and analysis, right?
Yes.
Okay, anywhere particularly going to be looking at an overview or any place particular? Or are you going to?
Well, we're going to start at the top. We're going to go over the executive summary, not the whole thing. But what I consider, I kind of skimmed it and speed read it, and there's a couple of pieces there that I consider very, very important to bring out.
Okay.
Let me see here. How come I don't see? Okay, I guess that's it there. Let me just make sure I got... Okay, let me see if this is going to work out now. I see John DeRash. Do you see my screen yet?
I see your screen. Yep.
Okay, so that's just
put
you.
Put it on full view.
Yeah.
What you could do with that, if you double-click, go back to where you got me, John DeRash, in there. Go back. Double-click on the top tab. Yeah, right there. Just double-click. Okay, it should have opened. There it goes. Now go up and hit your minus on the top right-hand side. It'll fall down and get out of your way. Because you only got one screen, right? Yeah.
I only want this screen.
Yeah, now make your screen full. Hit that to zero up there. To minus zero, exit to zero. Full screen.
That's not it.
Yeah, that's it. We'll hit it again. Okay, I guess you're in full screen, huh?
I am, but I don't know that I need this stuff here. I think I could click
out of it. Go to the middle. Go up, right there. Now click it. You got
okay.
it?
Okay.
Click
that's
it
as,
again.
That's as full as we're going to get. Yeah, it'll come back out.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, if that's as full as we're going to get, let's go.
That's it.
Okay.
Well, it gets better when the print comes, see?
All right.
So this is their fancy... Report, Mesa County, Colorado voting systems. This is a forensic analysis that's
so
just got done.
So this is the actual forensic report.
That's right.
Now I've been hearing a couple of individuals talking about this. I Christian Patriot, and I also Dave from X22 yesterday or today. As a matter of fact, I think it was today. Was talking big time on this stuff, and that the report was about to come out. And so on and so forth, and it was going to blow the top off of things, and so on. So
these are the dominoes. These are the dominoes that need
right.
to fall.
But by the way, this is all pre-planned in order for, as you mentioned earlier, for people to see and understand what's going on.
Right.
This doesn't surprise me. I've known that the elections have been. Or I suspected that the elections have been fixed for a very long time, and there was a. A thing out. I'm trying to think if it was Ed. What was his name?
Griffin.
Griffin. Yeah, I don't know what Griffin did. I think Griffin did something on the stealing of the elections.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think he did too, yes.
Yeah, and I was, and that's quite some time ago. And mm-hmm. they were bringing it before a judge and laying out a lot of information in detail and control that they had, and it just disappeared. Nobody did anything. And of course, that's because, like you say, they control everything. They control the media. Actually, the government tells the media what to do in order to control the people and, you know, keep the narrative that they want in place.
Yeah, so they're absolutely...
I shouldn't say the government. I should say the deep state.
Yeah, the deep state. Well, yeah, right.
But, okay. All right. So this is the report everybody's been talking about that's going to blow the top off of things. And this was released, I guess, today. Just today, right?
I think so, yes, today.
Okay,
and,
take us...
What I was going to say is, you know, one of the strategies of the White Hats was to give these guys enough rope and they would hang themselves. And case in point is that recall election of Gavin Newsom. They couldn't help themselves. They had to cheat. And don't you think all eyes were on that election? But they cheated anyway because they couldn't stand to lose their boy. And it's going to all come out. I mean, it's, you know, they continually pick up the bait that the White Hats throw at them, and they get caught with it in their throats as they're swallowing it. So this is all part of that. So this is report one with forensic analysis and examination, September 15th, I guess.
15th, so.
Yeah.
Okay,
so here's the table.
That's when it was written. It was just released today, though. Probably.
Right. So here's your table of contents. We're only going to go over the executive summary. We're not going to get into this. This stuff is all interesting, but it's a very, very good summary. Once we get through this summary, you're going to have a good idea of everything that this is all about. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a very excellently written, and it's a little long, but we'll get through it. And I'm not going to read every single word.
Well, I
think
you have to remember, you know, it was the first miracle that took place is that Trump got elected.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
But,
yeah.
But he was so popular that he was able to get elected.
Well, they said I'm leaving the country, I'll eat my hat, I'll do this. You know, they did the same thing when Reagan was running. They didn't expect him to win either.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing new under the sun. So let's go through this. This is important, and I'll go as quick as I can because you'll get the idea. This report documents initial findings in an ongoing forensic examination of the voting systems of Mesa County, Colorado, used in the November 2020 general election. These voting systems represent a portion of overall election systems infrastructure, and this report is limited to the findings of an ongoing investigation. The findings in this report were prepared by the cyber forensic expert retained to advise the county clerk pursuant to her duties as the county's chief election official as part of the impacted party's legal team. Now, just real quick here to explain something. What they're saying is this is just a portion of the overall election system infrastructure. You still have mail-in ballots. You have absentee ballots. You have other things that come into. This is just the electronic voting portion is all this is speaking about, which the electronic portion is a very, very, is probably the biggest portion. Most everything is done electronically today. So bear that in mind. Federal law requires the preservation of election records, which includes records in electronic or digital form, for 22 months after an election. Colorado law requires the preservation of election records for an additional 3 months beyond the federal requirement. The obligation to ensure the integrity of elections and that all election records are preserved pursuant to federal and state law falls to the elected clerk and recorder. This report, the first of several, is based on the examination of data obtained from forensic images of the Dominion voting system EMS server last used in Mesa County for November 2020 election. Images taken in furtherance of the preservation requirements of federal and state law, based upon information received by the clerk's office from various sources in early 2021. the clerk became concerned that the voting system modifications might jeopardize these preservation and other legal requirements under the responsibilities of the county clerk. This was a good county clerk, by the way. For this reason, the clerk ensured a full backup of election records from the county voting systems both before and after the software modification. See, they came in and did software modification of the machines within days before the election, which is not supposed to happen, but it did. And this clerk had the wherewithal to do a before and after snapshot of this crap. But anyway, I digress. For this reason, she ensured a backup of election records from the county voting systems both before and after the software modification performed by the vendor and the Secretary of State on May 25th and 26, 2021, just 6 months after the November 2020 election. Forensic examination found that the election records, including the data described in the Federal Election Commission's 2002 voting system standard mandated by Colorado law as a certification requirements for Colorado voting systems, have been destroyed on Mesa County's voting system by the system vendor and the Colorado Secretary of State's office because similar modifications were reportedly performed upon county election servers across the state. It is possible, if not likely, that such data destruction in violation of state and federal law has occurred in numerous other counties. No, I don't doubt it. The extent and manner of destruction of the data compromising these election records is consequential, precluding the possibility of any comprehensive forensic audit of the conduct of any involved election. This documented destruction also undermines the conclusion that these Colorado voting systems and accompanying vendor and Colorado Secretary of State issued procedures could meet the requirements of Colorado and federal law, and consequently vitiates the premise of the Colorado Secretary of State certification of these systems for use in Colorado. So he's saying they could not even certify. Because what just that problem right there, it vitiates, you know, fraud vitiates everything. And that's what they're saying. The two backup images using forensic imaging methods were obtained from the Dominion Voting System, DVS, Democracy Suite, D-Suite, Election Management Systems, and he's given you all the acronyms, EMS, Standard Server in the Mesa County, Colorado. The first image was made of that EMS standard server in the D-Suite 5.1 CO version configuration as used in the November 2020 election. The second image was the confirmation of the EMS standard in the D-Suite 5.13 version configuration. The following modification of the EMS standard service by any combined team of DFS vendor personnel and Colorado Secretary of State staff. The forensic information provided in this report is presented using screenshots from forensic analysis systems running industrial standard forensic software tools. The report includes before and after screenshots from the forensic tool that shows the difference between the two backup images. Now, don't worry about if you don't understand all that, because it's going to become clear as I go on. The forensic examination found that numerous log files had been deleted or overwritten. That's important. These log files are required to reconstruct the function of events taking place on the voting system based upon information provided by legal counsel must by law be preserved. Before we go further, I'm going to read this footnote here. Many individuals and organizations, some public officials, have made recent claims that no audit performed nor examination conducted on elections or computer-based election systems can be legitimate or credible unless the examiners are election experts or accredited election auditor. Well, there is no such thing as an accredited election auditor, nor are there federal standards or procedures to credential election auditors. So this is what the left is always saying. Oh, it's not true because they're not certified. There's no such thing. Again, the emperor has no clothes. They're screaming about something. They're selling you something that doesn't even exist. Look at it. It's people and paper. And you're not supposed to need a rocket scientist education to watch these things. And if that's the case, then you need to scrap the system and go back to something simpler. But that's my opinion anyway. So knowing that there's no such thing as an accredited election auditor, nor are there federal standards or procedures to credential election auditors. But they're screaming they want this. Oh, but the election is good. And who said it was good? Well, it certainly wasn't an accredited election auditor because there is no such thing. Anyway, I'll go on because I could keep going. Now we got to finish this here. Reconstruct an events taking place in the voting system based upon information provided by legal counsel must by law be preserved by comparing file names of the two images before and after the Dominion update on May 25th, 26th. Examination and analysis identified a total of 28,989 files that were deleted. My goodness. During the software update, some replacement of the program files and the related content is normally expected. However, the examination found that 695 log files necessary for the determination of election integrity were deleted. How convenient. Based upon information by legal counsel, Colorado law, Colorado revised statute, and he gives the statute, requires that prior to the use in Colorado elections, electronic computer-based voting systems be certified by the Colorado Secretary of State. This certification is based on the system compliance with the requirements of Federal Election Commission's 2002 Voting System Standards, VSS, verified by their testing by a federally accredited by vote of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. So there is a federally accredited, commission. EAC Voting System tab. While several iterations of newer voluntary voting system guidelines have been issued by the EAC, which is the Election Assistance Commission, EAC, several iterations of newer voluntary voting have been issued by the EAC, Colorado's statutory requirements is for compliance with the 2002 VSS, which states election audit trails provide the supporting documentation for verifying accuracy of reported election results. They present a concrete, indestructible archival record of all system activity related to the vote and are essential for public confidence in the accuracy of the tally for recounts and for evidence in event of criminal civil litigation. And that's exactly what they destroyed, but let's go on. The relevant sections of the VSS are cited in Appendix E. These statutory requirements establish that the voting systems are required to generate, preserve as critical to the ability to determine and reproduce conditions and details of election conduct using these systems. Log files of all these functions, including normal activity, connectivity, file and data access, operator and automated processes and errors. Log files are critical to the ability to detect improper operations, including the ability to detect malicious intrusions as well as improper activities or conditions and configuration changes that could enable alteration of the actual vote count. You know, it was a few years ago I went to know what the hell a log file is. I know now. I know over the past 10 years I'm messing with computers. We know what they are because when you have a problem, that's what you look at. You look at your log files. Assuming this information to be correct, this forensic examination found that a substantially large number of these requirements have not been met. This examination also found that destruction of critical log files has occurred. This destruction is not incidental or minor, but is extensive. The purpose of this initial report is to document these findings and present preliminary evidence demonstrating unacceptable conduct and system defects revealed by examining the images as necessary for the chief election official to discharge her statutory obligation. The facts and resultant findings support the conclusions that 1. Election-related data explicitly required to be preserved as stated in the 2002 VSS criteria referenced in this section have been destroyed in violation of federal and state law. And 2. Due to noncompliance with the 2002 VSS requirements, these voting systems and accompanying vendor-provided Colorado Secretary of State approved procedures cannot meet the certification requirements of the state of Colorado and should not have been certified for use in the state. It gets worse, folks. Comprehensive investigation is required to determine whether these critical failures are the result of malicious intent or negligence, and to what extent the systems may have been compromised or subjected to unauthorized access or operation prior to, during, and after election use. That comprehensive investigation is beyond the scope of this report. Subsequent reports will address these issues in detail. Evidence supporting all of these findings is documented in this report. Well, anybody that said that the cyber or whatever they were didn't know what they were doing, that was a lie from hell. I'll tell you what. These guys are good. Anyway, this goes on. Let me see. We're going to let me just kind of get an idea where we're going. I think we're only going to go to here, to four. Let me see. Where were we? I'm going to get lost. But there's some really important stuff in here I want to get out. Yeah, we're going to get into the real nitty-gritty here. I'm lost. Due to okay, so I read that. Introduction. Election officials, including Secretaries of State, are obliged by law to ensure the integrity of all elections, including the transparency required for citizens to verify that integrity themselves. Modern electronic voting systems are marked as an efficient solution to streamline the voting process and allow for automated collection, tabulation, and reporting of election results. But the efficiency they promise comes at a cost. The necessary measures and safeguards to ensure the integrity of the systems and their operations against a severe, mounting, and ever-evolving threat from sophisticated nation-state and non-nation-state actors are so complex and dynamic as to outpace the limited capabilities and resources of our government at all levels. Now listen to that. That's an important sentence. While minimal security safeguards may be within government capacity, modern computer-based voting systems are extremely complex and difficult to secure, even for cybersecurity experts. And since voting systems are not under the direct control of the federal government, federal government's top security experts, any government assurances about sufficiency of those safeguards can serve only to mislead the citizens and policymakers. Even critical defense systems relentlessly monitored. So even our critical defense system, like our missile systems, relentlessly monitored and defended by highly trained teams using costly, sophisticated tools, are at risk and are frequently compromised, sometimes before procurement. That means before they even got them, before they bought them, before they made them, they were already compromised. It was built into them. Remember that. I lost my place. Safeguards, even critical, relentlessly monitored, highly trained, are frequently compromised, sometimes before procurement. Earlier generations of voting systems relied on simple human-scale safeguards, for example, air gaps, that is, to have no wired network connection to the system. Now, here comes the good part. But miniaturized wireless communication technologies and networks have proliferated, with billions of wireless devices installed or in use, and malicious actors have developed sophisticated attacks to bypass air gaps, compromise every kind of hardware, firmware, and software, often before they can even come to the customer, user, or possession, and move laterally through the network systems, often undetected. So this has been going on for years, folks. Supply chains for these systems, from the initiation of the design of integrated circuit and electronic components, most manufactured overseas with little U.S. insight or oversight, through the fabrication, testing, assembly, integration, and operation of these complex composite systems, are vulnerable and untrustworthy for critical functions of government and lucrative economic and national security targets. For all these reasons, log files such as those that have been deleted by Dominion and the trusted build update must be preserved to document and complete the complete operation of the computer system and voting application and be able to verify the authenticity, integrity, and accuracy of the vote. The feature size of individual circuits of chipsets and components of our voting system computers is in the nanoscale, smaller than the smallest known virus particle. Now we're into viruses. We all know what viruses are. Well, guess what? Your voting system has viruses in it too. And they probably come from the same shot. I don't know. So virus particle, and they're less than 3/10,000 of the width of a human hair. Imagine that. So we have lost the ability, if we ever had it, to visually verify what is really happening, even at the physical level, in our computer-based voting system. Regardless of how the systems appear to be configured or authorized users and poll watchers, the functionality and connectivity in these computers can be enabled and modified remotely and wirelessly, or by the introduction of embedded codes on scanned paper, or triggered by specific, unforeseeable, and indiscernible predetermined software and hardware conditions, or by specific timing events, or by geographic location, or by the proximity of other devices, or combination of these means, which means they got 6 ways to Sunday to get in that machine and change stuff. That's what that says. For example, some Colorado voting systems ordered as specified by the voting system vendors from foreign manufacturer assembly facilities have included integrated Dell Remote Access Controller, iDirect, which are designed to allow out-of-band remote management of those systems, meaning that the computers are explicitly equipped to be controlled by remote automated programs or by individuals other than those logged in locally. Through iDirect, voting systems may have any aspect of their basic input-output system, we all know what a BIOS is, that's that basic input-output system, operating system, or applications controlled or modified, including the addition and deletion of user accounts. Imagine letting some foreign government into your BIOS in your computer. That's what that is. Operating system, application, controller, modifier, enabling of communication components like wireless networking cards and the modification, installation, removal, or configuration of software settings like the inclusion of multi-band wireless networking cards similarly specified and ordered for Colorado voting systems by the vendor. There is no excuse or rational justification for the inclusion of components like these. And the fact that the entirety of the U.S. voting system, regulatory process, and institutions can apparently neither detect, note, or address these gross, vulnerable, eviscerates the notion that our computer-based voting systems have been secured. And all these people, all these officials certified the election. I wouldn't have the courage to certify any election knowing these facts, that they're working at the nanoparticle level. It's impossible to see any of this stuff. You need an electron microscope. This needs to go in the dumpster, all of this. Faced with incredible miniaturization, the importance of log files, which are records of operation on a computer system, and you know they're gonna give us a lot of crap. They're gonna figure we're stupid, and we are stupid if we don't educate ourselves. And they're gonna say, oh, no. Once you have this information, see, this is power. You're gonna know what a log file is. You're gonna know this miniaturization, and you're not gonna fall for their crap. And you're gonna know there's no such thing as a certifiable federal auditor or anything like that. That the federal government doesn't even have standards on that. But anyway, so the importance of log files, which are the records of operation on a computer system, are more important than ever in managing this technology. When a computer is part of a national critical infrastructure, these operational records become essential, not only for troubleshooting or security alone, but for the integrity of the system itself as a component of the national critical infrastructure. For the purposes of this document and ensuing discussion, two terms are defined to differentiate and clarify the evidentiary findings. Election data is all the information regarding ballot designs, ballot marking, electronic scanning of completed ballots, interpretation of the intention of each voter's choice, including human machine-generated programmatic adjudication in the event that the election system is unable to determine conclusively the correct vote input from any specific ballot, tabulation of the actual vote, including the databases used to actually contain the raw vote totals, scan ballot images, and voter registration and voter identification information associated with the specific election, as well as the actual vote totals. Now, all that is that that's just looking at the paper and where the person marked it. And that, like that guy, what was his name, that was looking at the fold marks and all that? I forget his name. But he came up and he was forensically examining. He said, how could this have been sent through the mail? There's no, when it goes through the mail is sorted with machines and it leaves certain folds and roller marks, and they had none. So they knew that all those pristine ballots were fake. And that's what this is. That's basically what this is telling you. That's one part of it that they're looking at. And you know, hanging chads and all that stuff, including human machine generated or input from any specific ballot, tabulation of the actual vote, including databases used to actually contain the raw vote total, scanned ballot images, and voter registration and voter identification information associated with any specific election, as well as the actual vote totals. This includes a complete record of any real-time changes in databases resident in the cloud, such as voter registration data, election-related data, and includes all of the computer log configuration data, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to skip this here, such as network attached days. So both election data and related data must be preserved as election records under law, which is broadly addressed both in 2002 VSS and the EAC's successor versions of the VVSG. And anyway, this is the law under 2002, and you can read it yourself. These, among other measures, will help ensure what is known as the CIA triad. The CIA triad represents the three pillars of information security, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. So I think that's as far as I'm going to go. This is talking about the CIA triad, which they don't have. They don't have any integrity and availability or confidentiality in this, based on what I just read. And they're going to explain that, and I'm not going to go through it. You need to get this thing and read. This is good reading on the couch or in the bathroom or whatever, but it's going to give you enough knowledge to know what they're talking about here in the next couple of weeks as these dominoes begin to fall, and you don't fall for their baloney. When they say, oh, no, you can't look, the cyber ninjas don't know what they're doing because they're not federally accredited, when there's no such thing as federally accredited, and they pull that. I don't know how many times I heard that on the news, just to give you an idea. They're claiming that you need to be something that doesn't even exist. Again, the emperor has no clothes. So you get an idea of how important this is, and they completely destroyed records that they're supposed to keep for 2 years, and then the state law says, oh, no, well, we're going to keep it even 3 months longer than that. So they broke federal law, they broke state law. What are we going to do about it? We're going to let them go? This is serious stuff, folks. We haven't had an honest election in years and years and years, and certainly not since they went to any of this computer stuff, because I dare say that a lot of this stuff was undetectable years ago, and they just get better and better at it, quicker and quicker and smaller and smaller. We need to get back to some real-time paper and wet ink and that type of stuff that can be controlled by we the people, and it's the same type of a system that we want in our court system, such as our common law grand jury, to police the government. Because look at, you know, the government, how can you expect the government to guarantee a system is honest in election when they're controlling it? And what does government do? All it wants to do is get more power. You can't trust the government to police the government. There's no way. That's why we have our juries and our grand juries, because that's where we plug into the system. And if we don't start plugging these things in, we're done. This whole computer thing, nanotechnology here, less than 3/10,000ths of the width of a human hair is what they're working on. You can't see that. That's smaller than a virus. We're counting our vote with things that are smaller than a virus, and they can hide backdoor things in there, 3/10,000ths of an inch, that you'll never see, and you won't know they're there, or how they operate, or how they integrate with even stuff that's wirelessly close to them. This is ridiculous. This has to go to bed. It has to go bye-bye. There's no way, in my mind, that you can ever, ever guarantee the security of all this technology. The technology has outrun the ability of us to keep up with it. And you got only a few elite people that understand this. And guess what? That's the time to throw it in the trash can, because we don't need anything like that. So I'm going to go ahead and stop now. I think you've got an idea. I don't know. I did we put up the URL to get this stuff? Where was the?
No, it's kind of a long URL. We can send it out though in a mail message to everybody. Brent is here. If you want to pass it to him, I don't.
Yeah. Well, before we do that though, I'd like to just add something onto this, because I heard some of this conversation concerning, you know, this particular subject matter. On, I think it was yesterday, not today's, but yesterday's X-22, which would have been recorded on Sunday, and then I heard it Monday. And Monday I haven't heard yet, so I'll hear that tomorrow. But I also heard Christian Patriot News talk about this also. They were talking about the Durham. And I'd like to try to play something, if I can, real quick. But let me read just this paragraph.
Do you want me to stop my screen share?
Yeah, stop the screen share, and let me see if I can play this video. This video is about, just a couple of minutes long. And Trump not long ago said, we can't wait till 2022. America won't be here in 2022. Yep. And I think that's what we're saying here, that... That and many, many other things and controls that they have, and the narrative that they control.
We're out of time. Everybody should know that.
Yes, I don't think we should worry too much about it. I mean, sure, we should be worried about it. I do believe that Trump has everything in hand. They're setting the stage, trying to say that President Trump is trying to execute a coup, and that he's using the U.S. military to do it. And of course, he is planning to use the U.S. Military to take back this nation.
That was a Freudian slip. He's executing a coup. No, I'm sorry.
But let me read this real quick. Let me take control. Did you stop sharing?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Okay, let me start sharing. Let's see what I'm going to be able to put up here. Hold on a second. Let me put a few things. Put that up there. Okay, so like that, and like that. I guess just this one page. I guess I'm going to share whatever else I might open up. But Deep State, are you able to see this? Am I sharing right now? And are you seeing?
Yes, you are. I see extra, okay. Extra. Yeah, I do.
Okay, the Deep State is panicking over Durham. Durham has finally released something, and there was an indictment that was released on some big wheel, wig. Not that I recognize the name, but someone important, and many more to come. But remember, Durham's been gone for 3 years, roughly speaking. I think it was 3 years, maybe even longer. And nobody knows where his office is at. Nobody knows who's working with him. He just disappeared. And he now, and that's why Trump, every once in a while, you know, where's Durham? Where's Durham? And what's that thing, that little cartoon, where's somebody?
Waldo. Where's Waldo?
Where's Waldo? Instead of Waldo, it's where's Durham.
And the first indictment was from the guy that did the Russia narrative and caused the FISA court to investigate Trump and all his baloney. And he manufactured information and lied. If you read the indictment, you'll understand. And this is the very low, low hanging fruit. It's going to get worse from here. Okay? He took the littlest thing first. But he has to take the littlest thing first, because it was the first thing that we saw. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, anyway, real quick, the deep state is panicking over Durham and the forensic audit. They are now in the process of trying to spin the story of Durham, that he found nothing and it will lead to nothing. But this is just the beginning. As time goes on, the fake news will not be able to spin the story. What's that, Scavino, I think it is, sends a message, and the military, Marines, are on the way to help. Devolution is about to unfold. The deep state failed on the J protests in D.C. Nobody showed up, and there were more reporters, FBI agents, police, than there were people. Fast forward, it did not work. Trump has said it from the beginning. We caught them all, and it's all on tape. Trap set, and the deep state fell right into it. Okay, now I'm going to play the tape where, very interesting where Trump revealed this, because he revealed this in a debate that he had with Biden, and Biden looked pretty upset during that time period when he was talking about this. So hopefully the audio will come through. I'm going to put my mic up on my speaker, and hopefully it'll pick up. Let me know if this audio is coming through. I'm in the way here. Tell me if the audio is coming through.
Actually, he did one tweet, and then he retweeted the same.
Is that audio coming through? Was that audio coming through?
Yes.
It was. Okay, so I'm going to play this video. It's only about a two-minute clip, if that. And let's see where we go. If you can't hear the audio, let me know.
Same exact tweet. Now, this is a flood, and you see the Marines coming to the rescue of a person who is stuck in the flood, and they go ahead and they push the car out of the flood. Now, when you see this, it shows that the Marines, the military, they're on their way. Help is coming. So let me go back to post 40. And why do I say 40? Because the video that he showed on the first tweet, then the retweet, the video was 40 seconds long. So this is November 2nd, 2017. And it says 4:10:20. And then under it says A, B, C, D, E. We've seen this before. So it's Donald J. Trump. And then, since he mentioned the Marines, showing the Marines are coming to help, let's look at the Marines. Post 14. So post 14, there's a lot in here, but I'm going to read this part that says, what authority does POTUS have specifically over the Marines? Well, the Marine Corps Law 1834 gives President authority over Marines for any duties the President sees fit. As outlined in 10 U.S.C. Section 5063, as an originally introduced under the National Security Act of 1947, three primary areas of responsibility for the Marine Corps are seizure or defense of advanced naval bases, and other land operations to support naval campaigns, development of tactics, technique, and equipment used by amphibious landing forces in coordination with the Army, Air Force, and such other duties as the President or Department of Defense may direct. Now, that's very interesting. If we move to post 17, this is October 31st, 2017, and I'm going to read the third line down. It says, focus on the power of POTUS as it relates to the Marines. How can military intelligence be applied to prosecute bad actors and avoid corrupt agencies and judges? Biggest drop on poll. So let's think about this for a second. Focus on the power of POTUS as it relates to the Marines. Well, POTUS, which is really Trump, he has full control of the Marines. Devolution has been set up. How can military intelligence be applied to prosecute bad actors? Well, they become enemy combatants when they're colluding with foreign governments. So think about election fraud. Then think about Durham, which is going to back up even election fraud. It's going to show that they colluded, these deep state players colluded with foreign governments. Then let's go to post 22. This is November 1st, 2017. Who controls the National Guard? Why was the National Guard recently activated in the select cities within the U.S.? Can the National Guard work in coordination with the Marines? Yes. Do conditions need to be satisfied to authorize? What former president used the military to save the Republic? And what occurred exactly? Biggest drop to ever be provided on poll, study, and prepare. The masses tend to panic in such situations. No war, no civil unrest. Clean and swift. All part of devolution. And remember, Trump, he said it for a very long time. We caught them all. We caught them all. We got it on tape. Listen to Trump when he was having a presidential debate with Biden. He actually says this. Take a listen.
Transition, because they came after me trying to do a coup. They came after me spying on my campaign. They started from the day I won and even before I won, from the day I came down the escalator with our first lady. They were a disaster. They were a disgrace to our country. And we've caught them. We've caught them all. We've got it all on tape. We've caught them all. And by the way, you gave the idea for the Logan Act against General Flynn. You better take a look at that, because we caught you in a sense. And President Obama was sitting in the office. He knew about it, too. So don't tell me about a free transition.
So, as Trump says, they got them all. He trapped them all. Let me go back to post 3852. This is February 10, 2020. Here, it gives us a post from 3596. It says, what advantages might exist when you know the other side's playbook? And then it has a link. It says Merriam-Webster's.com dictionary trap, and trap is highlighted. Enjoy the show. So, Trump, Q, they're letting us know that the deep state players, they were trapped. They set a trap. This is the biggest sting operation we've ever seen. They caught them all. They have it on tape. They have it recorded. And everything that we're witnessing right now, everything that's going down right now, where the Biden administration, the deep state players, everything that they're doing, the military is still recording all of this. Why interfere with an enemy while they're in the process of destroying themselves? Remember, Trump still had to get them in other areas. So we have Durham, who did an investigation. Then they committed election fraud. Now they're still communicating with each other. Now they're going to cause chaos. They're working with the foreign government this entire time. All of it's being recorded. Durham is going to back it up. What they have today is going to corroborate everything that Durham has. There is no escape from this. Trump, the Patriots, they got them. And it seems that very soon, when this is all brought out, which is going to happen very soon, I don't mean it's going to happen the next day after the 24th. It might take a couple of weeks. Yes, the deep state's going to fight back. But we can see that everything has been prepared for this moment. We don't know exactly when it's going to go down, but we can see that everything is in place. And this is the biggest trap, the biggest sting operation we have ever seen. He caught them all. Listen, everyone, thanks a lot for listening. Be well, be safe, and especially be prepared.
Okay, I guess I'm a little longer than a few minutes, but let me shut this off.
I also want to make another comment.
Hopefully that came out pretty clear.
No, it was good.
Okay, yeah, I think it gives us a lot of hope. Dave has been on top of this thing for as long as I found him. I mean, he's really been right out there in front. And this other guy, Christian Patriot, also is bringing some really good stuff out. Mm-hmm. And he had some stuff. He was talking about Durham and also the forensic release and all that stuff. So there's a lot of hope out there. The plan is in. You know, look at the fix is in to capture these people. The military is on the ball here. They're ready to do what they have to be done. The problem is we don't know exactly when that's going to happen. And of course, we just have to wait. But meanwhile, what we need to be doing is to educate ourselves so that we, the people, can take back our nation. We, the people, can understand how to have government by consent. And that's why, I'm going to go right back to this again, that's why our campaign for constitutional sheriffs is so important. And by the way, I did get a letter back from one sheriff. I don't have it handy. Maybe next week I'll read it. It's a very short little card. But he seemed appreciative of the gift that we had given him. Again, I'll read that next week. But maybe what we're going to do now is I'm going to let you finish off what you're talking about, the subject, and then we'll introduce Brent, and then I'll pass the board over to you, and then we'll take questions after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
All right. Okay.
Go ahead, cap off, and then we'll move over to Brent. Brent is still here, right?
I don't know.
No. Right, well, we'll find out in a minute. But, yeah, he's here. I see it just popped up. All right, go ahead.
What I wanted to say is, besides all this other craziness, why am I hearing myself?
I'm going to get rid of my... you're good now.
Okay.
No feedback and through me.
Okay, we just talked about Trump, election fraud, and all that other stuff. But what we didn't discuss is the virus that is they're using to lock us down, and to basically eliminate us with their shot. You know, the variant is the shot. I'm going to come right out and say that. That is the variant, is the vaccine. That's what's causing the problems, and it was designed to do that. And what I know so many people that are threatened, they're telling them you either take the shot or you lose their jobs. And the proper answer for that is you let them fire you. You do not resign. You don't walk off, because technically speaking, and I don't know how stupid people can be, this goes back to maxims of law, common law, God's law. They cannot require you to take an experimental vaccine and tell you that you'll lose your job if you don't. That vaccine doesn't even have a MSD, a material data sheet. It has no ingredients. It says left intentionally blank. So how can the person giving it to you give you informed consent when he or she doesn't even know what the hell is in there? And when they started this vaccine, they had two patented chemicals, whatever they were. But as they rolled it out, they got up to seven. And they could change them at will without telling us, because it's under emergency use, and they don't want to give out their secrets. How do they think that they can require you to do something that has already been established in law? It's been established in numerous places, including Nuremberg and other international tribunals, because that's what was going on in Nazi Germany. They were doing this experimental stuff that they outlawed. It falls all under that. They cannot require it. And it's a hell of a lawsuit if they fire you, you know, and then they don't want to give you unemployment. You go through all the steps of applying and doing it, because technically they know that their game is over. I guarantee you. This is an act of desperation. I'm telling you, either you take the shot or you get fired. We have to have mass civil disobedience. Look, they can kill me. I'll take the shot. It'll be the bullet is the only shot I'm going to take if they shoot me in the head, basically. And everybody should have that conviction. They're going to kill your kids. They're going to kill everybody, because this shot is definitely a death sentence. And you should educate yourself on what to do. Just being around people that took the shot is dangerous. It's documented fact that they're shedding this stuff or transferring. It's not really a vaccine, so it's not shedding. It's a transfer, and there are things that you can do. The head of Pfizer said, you're all going to be dead within 3 years, and there's nothing you can do. Well, I've discovered through my research, and you know, these aren't my words. These are guys that are way above my pay grade that says, look, there are certain things that you can do, and if you can survive a few flu seasons, because that's what will happen with all the animal testing. That's why they stopped it. And they gave the vaccination. Yeah, some of them died right away, like you're seeing now. And there's a lot of people dying right away, a lot. And I listened to my scanner, and, I mean, it's ridiculous what's happening out there, and nobody's screaming. It's really epidemic, the amount of people dropping dead. But the ones that don't drop dead, and they could live fine for the next 6 months to a year, as soon as that wild virus comes back in, and this is what happened to all the animals, the last test of the efficacy of the vaccination is to reintroduce the virus to the subject and see how he handles it. Well, in every case, 100%, the animal had a cytostorm and his immune system killed him. What do you think is going to happen to us? All the cats, all the ferrets, they died en masse. They were getting hundreds and thousands of them coming back dead. So you need to educate yourself. You need to procure yourself those things like fennel seeds and pine needle tea and hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, which you can't find anywhere now because they know it works so good they're taking it off the market. They're even taking the animal stuff off the market. You go into the feed stores, you can't find it because people have heard and they're buying it. And I think they're, you know, pharmacists refusing to fill the prescriptions of ivermectin that the frontline doctors are writing. So you need to stay on top of this, folks. You can make hydroxychloroquine by boiling grapefruit and lemon peel for 3 hours, and it produces hydroxychloroquine. Fennel seed has that ischemic acid that defeats the spike protein. These are things that everybody needs to bone up on, because if you're not healthy, you're not going to put your sheriff in. You're not going to fight this revolution. There's not going to be bullets. We're going to be dropping dead. So it's very important to keep your health up. Take your supplements every day. Vitamin D3 is the most important. Vitamin C, liposomal C, all this stuff is very important, because we're the army. And they look at who's the first ones they gave it to? The frontline workers, the first responders, the army, and this, that. Why? Because China wants to march in here when we're all sick and dying and take us over. That was their plan. And how much of this vaccine was placebo, I don't know. I hear stories. But I also know, when I'm listening to my scanner, there's people dying all over the place. And, you know, they don't have to say it's from, I already know. You know, when you get a 32-year-old woman or man that's having stroke symptoms, you know what it is. And a 15-year-old or an 18-year-old dying of blood clots, they speak in code now. They used to say, bad effects from the vaccination. I haven't heard that in months. When it first happened, they were saying it. They probably told them to shut up, because you don't hear that. But I can decipher what's going on with all these deaths. I hear it every day. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely, and it's not just old people. It's the whole range. And these are people that have taken the shot, and they get sick right away within the first week or two. Or they get a second shot, and they, you know, there's all kinds of crazy stories out there. One guy got paralyzed from the shot, and they said, oh, now you're vulnerable. You have a co-committing condition. You're paralyzed. You should take the boost. You should take the next shot, because the COVID's going to get you. He took the next shot, and he was dead within an hour. That's how stupid people are. But anyway, just educate yourself. Watch your health. Good hygiene. Supplement. You cannot eat. There is no diet out there that you can eat and get what you need. That's a mythical diet. Our soil doesn't produce it anymore. So if you're not supplementing, you are at deficient, and your immune system is down, and you don't need to take the shot. You're just going to come into contact with people that took the shot and shed that spike protein onto you, and you will get sick and die. But that was China's plan all along. Anyway, I'll stop now, and we'll hand it over to Brent. Are you there, Brent?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can.
So you can?
I can. Yes.
Oh, good. Okay,
so you're going to maintain the controls here, Gerard?
Yeah.
Okay, Brent Allen Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law website, commonlawyer.com. Brent, you have the mic.
Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Gerard. My comments are my own. I may or may not agree with the points of view of the principal players at the National Liberty Alliance, but they're kind enough to let me say a few words. Well, I'm with like kindred spirits, so I can say that. I listen to Gerard. I listen to John. I like to listen. It's encouraging to listen. And one of the things that is going to help all of us is just to be encouraged and not be discouraged. And I heard some of that too, reasons to be encouraged. I appreciated that. A freeman is someone who has the power of discretion. He has the power of discretion. He has the power to say yes, and he has the power to say no. If you don't have the power to say yes, or the gumption to say, no, I ain't wearing a mask. No, I ain't taking the jab. If you don't have that gumption, you're less than free. I was in a gas station not more than an hour and a half ago, and a walked in like I've done 1,000 times before, didn't give it a thought, gave the lady my money, told her what pump I was on, and she said to me, you have to wear a mask in here. If you don't, it's not fair to the other people. I said, thank you for the medical advice. If I give you my address, you can send me a bill. And I thought maybe she'd laugh. She didn't. Of course, she had a diaper on her head. I can't see. I'm going to make an observation here. And I'll let you exercise your discernment and decide why this is true. But this is true. Or however long this has been going on, a year and a half or more, I haven't ever wore a mask once. No brag, just fact. Just fact. I decided I wasn't going to do it, and I don't want to do it, and I'm not going to put a diaper on my head, and I'm going to have some pervert in government telling me to do that. That's less than dignified. It's less than manly. You shouldn't do it either. But I have been asked, told I had to wear a mask quite a few times, mostly in gas stations, sometimes a few times in Walmart, but never, ever has any man ever asked or told me to wear a mask. It's always been a female. Maybe you can figure out why that is. I don't know, but it's true. Most of them have been younger. Now, this one today was a little bit older. I just smiled and said, well, give me a receipt if you would. And hesitatingly, she didn't know what else to do. She gave me a receipt. Now I carry in my wallet an exemption. I even carry an exemption duly signed by a medical doctor in my wallet. I've never taken it out. I've never used it. I don't suppose I ever will. And if I ever tried to, it probably wouldn't help me anyway. Nobody would pay attention to it. I've been told by other people that's what happens. But the key to all of this, the key to prevailing in all of this, is to say no. In your heart of hearts, you believe it's the wrong thing to do to get jabbed or wear a mask. The question is, do you have a strong preference, or is it a conviction? Is it a strong preference, or is it a conviction? Now, I've also said from the beginning, and I still say it, all the scientific explanations are important, but I don't believe that's the best legal place to hang your hat, because every legal dispute is not in America, they're not about the law. We say we have lawsuits in America. We don't. We have fact suits. We don't fight about the law. We fight about the facts. That's what we fight about. We don't ask the jury what the law is. We ask them what the facts are, because that's what we're fighting about. That's what we're fighting about. So if you start really contending with them over statistics and all that, especially if you're not in court, maybe in court you can get somewhere. But here on the outside, no bureaucrat's ever going to listen to that, because all the bureaucrat wants to do is keep his job. He's going to do what he's told. And he's not going to exercise any discretion. He's not going to, he doesn't have the power. No, he doesn't have, yeah, well, no, I guess that's right. He doesn't have the power. He doesn't, there's no conviction to him. He doesn't have the gumption. He doesn't have the conviction. The only conviction he has is I'm going to keep my job and have security. So he's going to do what he's told. A policeman is going to do what he's told. We were talking about this with Sheriff Darr the other day, the difference between discretion and what we call arbitrary acts and administrative acts. All the world is governed by arbitrary government. That means the government and the lackeys of government do as they blame well please by their imperious will. Whatever they want to do, that ends the matter. If the legislature says this is the way it's going to be in the future and you don't conform, you're going to be prosecuted as a criminal. It doesn't make any difference whether the law would permit it or not. But then in America, we reject all that out of hand. We say arbitrary acts are never lawful. Never. Well, what do we have in America? Well, we have two kinds of acts of government. We have administrative acts and discretionary acts. Now, administrative acts are the acts of bureaucrats. Anyone who works for an administrative bureaucracy, or a policeman is an administrative bureaucracy guy. He, as a matter of law, He has no discretion to do anything, to make any choices about anything. The only thing he's supposed to do is enforce the code. If you run the stoplight, law says he has to arrest you. If he thinks he saw you run the stoplight. And he doesn't have discretion to do anything else. Now, that's not to say that policemen do not exercise such discretion on occasion. They do. But the law of administrative code, administrative law, we call it, demands that he do exactly what the minutia of the code tells him to do. That's what an administrative code is. It's minutia. And the idea of a code like that is to bind the bureaucrat at every conceivable point so that he never exercises discretion and never acts arbitrarily, just by his own imperious breath, whatever he wants to do. Administrative codes are not designed to control the bureaucrat. That's what an executive office, executive order is. An executive order is an order of an executive branch official, a governor or president, and that is to bind all of those bureaucrats in his control, including the military. He gives orders to the Marine Corps. He gives orders to the Army. He gives orders to the Navy. The Air Force, well, that's a bureaucracy. I wouldn't call it a part of the military services. I'm not saying that in jest, although people laugh. I don't know why we have an Air Force. The Army and the Navy has all the stuff Air Force has. Why would you need more bureaucracy? But when the president gives an order, and when a seaman deuce and a private soldier is given an order, they don't have discretion. No, they are bound. Bound by a minute code called the Uniform Code of Military Justice to do everything it says. Well, that's the nature of administrative law. And policemen are part of that. Well, we distinguish that, but from that, we distinguish the sheriff. The sheriff is not a police officer. The sheriff is a peace officer. Peace officer. What's the difference? Well, a peace officer has discretion to arrest or not arrest as a matter of law. A peace officer has a lot of discretion about a whole lot of things. Sometimes arrest may not be the right thing to do. A police officer does not, by law, have that discretion. Again, police officers do exercise discretion sometimes, but they're not supposed to. The law says they're bound. Their administrative law binds them to do certain things. Well, you, like the sheriff, and like the juror, you have discretion. You have the discretion, as a matter of law, to say yes and to say no. No, I don't worship your demon god, whatever demon god you worship, Joe Biden. We're not on the same page there, fella. I do not worship the god you worship. I do not attribute worthyship to what you attribute worthyship to. How is it that you can possibly govern me and exercise discretion over me? Now, what I'm saying is not an encouragement to treason. No, what I'm saying is an encouragement to law. We are under lawlessness. Joe Biden is lawless. Joe Biden isn't even president. I don't think anybody that has any discernment and discretion within his own power would say that he is president. He wasn't elected by the processes of our Constitution, by the processes of our law. He worships a God that I'm not familiar with, and we're not brothers, no, we're enemies, no question. And anyone who's an enemy of Christ is my enemy, period. And if that's not your point of view, you're part of the problem. I suspect I would get a lot of, in people's minds, they're saying to themselves, well, Brent, you're not throwing open the big tent. No, I'm not. I don't intend to. I don't intend to appeal to a large majority. I intend to speak to those who God has opened their ears, and also under full recognition that the majority never wins. The majority is generally always wrong. Well, we use majorities sometimes to jumpstart our government. But most people, this has been my observation, and I say it as I get older more confidently, most people have no real discretion. They can't tell the difference. If you think they can, again, that's just silliness. When you see people driving down the road in their cars with a diaper on their head all by themselves, or going in with a diaper on their head in the grocery store and buying 3 cartons of cigarettes, this is silliness. And they're saying, well, yeah, Mr. Joe Biden and Bill Gates, the perverts you are, well, I'll let you tell me what they can jab into my body. So what should you do? You should do what Jesus Christ tells you to do. Stand fast. He didn't say pick up your gun and go shoot the bureaucrats. The Declaration of 76 doesn't even say pick up your gun, much less shoot a bureaucrat. It is not a call to arms. Could it come to that? Well, it sure could. But that's not the initial call. Listen, you don't have to go looking for a fight. All you got to do is stand fast. The fight will come to you. The hatred, the viciousness, the attacks, it will swell. You want to be a martyr? You're being stupid. Don't go looking for a martyr's crown, said Wycliffe. Just do what God wants you to do, and a martyr's crown will find you soon enough. That's not funny, but what else are you going to do but laugh? Oh, it's a beautiful night tonight. I know a lot of you aren't looking at the moon, but I'm looking at the moon coming up. It's big and orange. Well, it reminds me who's in charge. That's what it does. And I'm not in charge, and Joe Biden not in charge. Our God is in charge. He's orchestrating all this for our good. There are many good things that are coming out of it. Many good things, and the question is, do you have conviction, or is it just a strong preference to do the right thing? Do you want to keep your job? I've gotten a few calls the last few weeks about people, not only in this country, but in Canada, that say, what do I do? Is there a common law remedy? Is there a common law remedy for me? Because they're telling me I can't send my children to school unless they're willing to wear the mask or get the jab. So I had to stop and think for a minute. And I said, well, yes, there is a common law remedy. A very good one, a very effective one. What is it? Get your child out of government school. That's your common law right. Get your child out of government school. You're not going to teach your child anything but what's evil there. That's the whole purpose behind the government school. There's not a school in the world that has ever existed. No university, no academy, no home school, no parochial school, no Christian school, no school anywhere. Ever existed but for one reason. And it's always the same. To put a particular construction on the facts of reality. To put a particular construction upon the facts of reality. The government schools want to put a particular construction on reality, on history. That's different than the same the construction of a parochial school or a Christian school. Those are all different. Or a school like MIT that says, well, we don't prescribe to any religious point of view. Yeah, but you're putting a particular construction on the facts that other people aren't putting on them. The facts aren't the thing people are disagreeing about. They're stubborn. They don't change. But the construction you put upon them, what do they mean? The evolutionist and the creationist have the same facts, the same geological record, the same Bible. If they want to acknowledge the Bible, they've got the same facts, but they are 180 degrees divergent. They're putting different constructions on it. Well, that's what government schools do. And there is a trilogy of Supreme Court cases in the United States, U.S. Supreme Court cases, that say that the parent of a child has the absolute, unfettered, uncompromised right to direct the education of his child, their child, mom and dad, or mom or dad, the education of their child. I mean, if you want to send them to government school, you can. If you want to send them to parochial school, you can. If you want to send them to Christian school, you can. If you want a home, hell, there's not a state law in the country that's upheld that it will prevent you from doing that. None. But if you send your child to a government school, when your child gets there, when your child gets on the bus, until your child gets off the bus, that child or that government school stands in the place of the parent. That's the law. That's been the law for hundreds of years, called parens patria. Parens patria, that means the in the stead of the parents, in the place of the parents. And while your child's at a government school, you have no say at all, mom and dad, what they're going to do with your child. How are you going to beat that? You're not going to beat that leaving your child in the government school. That's not even possible. When I was a boy, 7 years old, I remember specifically. Why? Because what happened on that rainy, cold evening out there standing watch at the hog lot, what happened there dictated my educational future. Dictated my educational future. And I never did homework after that. Tried to do it a little before that in the first and second grade. Never did it after that. Never did. My grades proved it, too. Oh, I learned a whole lot. Matter of fact, I've learned over the years, I've probably learned more than most and remembered more of it. Well, I was standing out there. My job was to keep the hogs in while Dad was scooping off the feeds in the scale house. It was wet and cold and rainy, and by the time we got home on the bus, it was an hour ride, and it was dark. And my brother and I were supposed to be keeping the hogs from getting out. The gate was open. Well, we'd throw mud balls at them and dirt clods, and then that got boring, and then I wandered over to the scale house, and I said, Dad, and he said, what is it? He was scooping feed. A whole wagon load of it into the feeder. I said, what is it? I said, I got homework to do. He said, now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You left early this morning before 7 o'clock, got on the school bus, and then you got off the school bus, 3:45, about 5 o'clock, 5:30, And you were there all those hours. What's that? See, five, about 10. Shoot, that's a long time. It's 8, 9, 10 hours, almost 10 hours. And they couldn't teach you what you needed to know? No, he said, that ain't right. Now, we're going to do the feeding, and we're going to do the work. And if you go to school that long, then you can get done what needs to be done there. Of course, that's not what was going on at school. What's going on at school is indoctrination, not education. Then they send you home. The government school sends the child home with homework and then puts the burden on mom and dad to make sure the learning gets done. Now, that's not right, but that's what they do. And I, of course, I thought, well, my dad, he knows everything. He's right, and the school's wrong, and I never did homework again. And it caused all sorts of problems. But my point being, that's indoctrination. When they're taking your child and indoctrinating him, then they turn it over to you to make sure the homework gets done. Well, they want to have the child there to prostitute the child for the money they get from the state. And they're going to socialize your child because your child, they say, can't be properly socialized. That's a phrase from Tom Dewey. John Dewey. John Dewey, born 1861. I believe he died in 59. A father of American education. He was a socialist. What's that? That's communism. And that's why social studies became front and center during his influence. You're not going to win sending your children to government school. The plan's been in place for a long time. It's coming full-fledged now. Jimmy Carter opened the floodgates, fulfilled his promise when he was elected president to appoint a czar of education to make a department of education. Federal money flows to the local school right down in podunk America, and they control everything they do. Well, that's the common law remedy, though. We have the Pierce case, Pierce versus Society of Sisters, an education case. We've got the Mayer case from Nebraska. We've got the Yoder case, an Amishman from Wisconsin. And then going back even further, I didn't mention this the other night, we've got Daniel Webster argued the case to the U.S. Supreme Court. I can't remember where. Oh, he went to Dartmouth. Yeah, it was the Dartmouth College case. had to do with private education. And there's no question in America, parents have the right, as a matter of law, as a matter of our United States Constitution, to control the upbringing and education of their children. I'm quoting pretty close to what the Yoder case said. That was the end of that trilogy of cases. So you can do that. But as long as your child is there, you have no say about anything as a matter of law. So I say the common law remedy is take the child out. Take him out. But he wants to play football. Who cares? You want him to be a communist? You want him to waste his life away? Is sports that important? All they're going to do is teach him how to cheat anyway. Well, this is Brent Allen Winters, CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. You can visit the website. Oh, join us for the sheriff course. On Thursday morning, Sheriff Darleaf, over 20 years sheriff there in Berry County, he's helping me teach the class. And we have 12 sessions long. We meet one time a week on Thursday mornings. It'll be 11 o'clock East Coast time, 8 o'clock West Coast time. You can extrapolate the middle there, the Rocky Mountain and the Central time. Or I'm convinced that the sheriff is key locally. He answers to the county. He doesn't answer to the president, and he doesn't answer to the governor. And that's important. Let's support our local sheriff. And the power of the sheriff is the posse. The posse is the possibility. It's a Latin word. It means possibility. That means possible power. That means potential. That means latent power, not yet patent. It's there, available to the sheriff, the posse. The posse is the same members, the posse of the county, as the state militia, but it's just the state militia members in your county, the men. They're there. How important is that? Oh, that's important. Well, we talk about those things, the history of the sheriff, going back to Alfred the Great, back to the 800s, the 9th century, and the office of sheriff hasn't changed substantially since then. Well, join us. Go to commonlawyer.com, and you can see how to join us. You see it? No. You can see how to join us there at the, in the class, Sheriff Darleaf and myself. Gerard, are you still there? Thank you very much.
Yes.
Hello.
As soon as I get my mute button unmuted.
Oh, I got you. You're very, very polite of you to hit that mute button. I sometimes forget, and yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, well, I like to make noise, so.
Well, yeah.
You know, Brent,
I was
going to say, you know, there's a lot of people that have fallen back on this religious exemption, which is starting to lose its effectiveness because this government doesn't care about religion. They don't believe in God even. So it's become very much less effective, the religious exemption. But one reason that I won't use it, because I feel that by taking a religious exemption, I'm giving them a certain amount of credibility. I don't believe at all in their science or any other part of that vaccination or that they can force me to take an experimental, emergency use only thing with no ingredients on it. I don't think we need to go to religious. I think we need to stand on fundamental principles. And by taking that religion, and I mean, believe me, there's plenty of reasons religiously that I don't agree with that thing, not the least of which is aborted fetal cells that I would never dream of putting in my body, and that is sort of a religious exemption, absolutely. But the fact of the matter is they don't want to answer the fundamental questions. They don't want to give us what's in it. You know, and we already have established law that they can't experiment on the population, but yet they do it, just like they do everything else. They steamroll us. But the reason they get away with it is because not enough people are standing their ground, just like you said with the mask. Well, the shot's the same thing. No, I'm not going to take it. You can't force me to take it. It's a matter of law. It's unconstitutional. You know, and it's against my unalienable rights. And so I, in a certain sense, the religious exemption is somewhat of a cop-out, I think, you know. But you know, maybe not, but, you know, I mean, I'm sure I could really get some good religious convictions on it within my heart. But right now, I feel that they're so wrong that I could just stand on the science and the facts and previous Supreme Court and Nuremberg courts and all this other stuff, established law that says that no government has that kind of control over me.
Well, Gerard, I know, and there's no question, that you think things through, and so I understand your point entirely, but I would say this, and it's right, I've watched the courts too, it's not effective like it was, but it's still true. But from Brent's point of view, all of the facts and all of the studies that are done for Brent, it's a matter of religion, because all truth is God's truth, and my respiration and my ability to breathe is a gift from God, Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. And to despise, this is my argument, and I know you don't, I would predict you wouldn't disagree with this, it's just that you're saying it's proving ineffective as an exemption. But to despise the gift is to despise the giver, and I'll scream it from now till the cows come home. I'm not going to say, no, I don't want to breathe. I'm going to impede my breathing. God doesn't want me to do that. He's real clear on that point. He gave it to me, and he wants me to use it, and he wants to use my breath to the full extent. So, yes, you are correct. I see that. You're right. But there's nothing wrong. There's everything right about saying the facts are against it, and the facts are on our side. We need to say that, but I would even argue that's for me and my life. That's religious. It's my response to my God, and I wouldn't exclude any fact in creation from God's absolute and sovereign control, and that's why I say that. Now, from your perspective, and I get what you're saying, the courts make the distinction you make. Some things are religious, so other things aren't. They would make that distinction. But Brent says no. Brent says that's not even true. Although it's a false distinction is what I'm driving at. So I'm going to say that. But if you say what you say and fight it on that level, and Brent fights it on this level, that's two fronts, and we need to do both. I don't quarrel with what you're saying either. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, the truth of the matter is I really do believe that every act is an act of religion. I've had this discussion with a philosopher, a guy who studied philosophy, and he came to that conclusion. And I do believe, because look, at everything we do, like you said, we live because the Creator gave us life and because we're following His rules. And so every act is technically an act of religion, right? I mean, that if you're practicing your faith, then everything you do is an act of religion.
It's your whole life. It's your whole life.
Yeah. Right, right. Mm-hmm. So... But you know, they do stuff, and it's pretty powerful. Even in the prisons, they give certain Muslims and different religious groups, they give them special diets and all kinds of other stuff they require. Mm-hmm. You know, so they are there is some precedent there for them to have to allow you to practice your religion to a point. You know?
Oh, man, you reckon, yeah. Of course, everybody in prison but the Christian man, the Islamic man, he gets everything. That's a true story. But, no, absolutely true. And, yeah, and this is a distinction, too, that I wanted to get to, maybe I will sometime. The First Amendment the protections of the First Amendment religion clauses are only for convictions, not for preferences. And that trilogy of cases I mentioned a while ago, Yoder, the courts lay that out clearly. And so it comes back to, again, are you going to stand fast or ain't you going to stand fast? Are you going to say no or ain't you going to say no? And if you have conviction, you'll say no. If you have a preference, at some point you're going to cave in. And a preference, of course, can be very, very strong, but still not be a conviction. And the U.S. Supreme Court, I think, has rightly recognized that the religion clauses only protect convictions. And that's true with the history of Christianity in the West. The folks that what we call martyrs. That's an old Greek word that means testimony. They made testimony with their own blood because they were murdered, because they wouldn't change their story, not because they did anything wrong. They just said, no, I'm not going to acknowledge Caesar as God. I'm not going to do that. Well, we're going to have to kill you then. And then they killed them for those kind of things. But that was a conviction. Well, then they said to them often, oh, come on, just drop your pinch of incense in the censer, and we don't care what you do the rest of the year. But if you don't do that, the law says we got to kill you. Well, I'm not doing that. Well, they killed them. And we don't want to be in that position here, of course. But I'm just making the point again, what the Supreme Court said, I think it was Black or Douglas that wrote that opinion. Those are like the Bobbsey twins. They always seem to agree. And some things they said were true, but they were consistent with the history of what we understand in the West of Christianity. I appreciate the case. By the way, since I've talked about it, I'll just say the name of the case and what year it was. I remember that much. That was Wisconsin versus Yoder. Yoder. Mr. Yoder was an Amishman, or as they say in Pennsylvania, an Amishman. And he didn't want, and the Amish still to this day, because of that case, they still don't send their boys and girls to school past the eighth grade, and they aren't 16 years old yet. Usually the statute says 15 or 16, you got to send your kids to school. So he wouldn't do it, and they came to him and said, you got to send your children to school. We're going to send you to jail. He said, okay. They said, we don't think you get it. We're going to send you to jail. Okay. Well, what do you think about that? Well, if you have to send me to jail, I guess that's what you'll have to do, but I'm not sending my children to your school. Well, that was the way he was his whole life. And that came out in court. And so by the time it got to the Supreme Court, they said, well, this man has revealed that he has a conviction. I had a client here recently in Missouri, nice fella. He beat the thing too, but it took him a year and a half, and it hurt him real bad. He had that bracelet on his leg that damaged him. But he went to prison twice. It was unbelievable what they did. State policeman got a bug in his bonnet about him. He was a Southern Baptist. He was a Nazi. And he told him, he said, your religion's got to stop at the four walls of your house. It ain't coming out here, said the state policeman. And he put him under arrest for nothing. They framed him. He hated him. They just hated the guy. Small town Missouri. And a great big fella, 6'4", a college baseball player. And he went, the second time he went 17 days, he wouldn't eat a morsel of food. And he got pretty thin, but I think it was the first time it was almost, or right at, 40 days he didn't eat a morsel of food while he was in prison. And the only reason they let him out was because they were afraid they're going to have a serious wrongful death suit on their hands, because a guy can't live much longer. Well, I told him, I said, you can hang your hat on the religion clauses, and he is a Christian man. And I don't agree with everything that he says. But his convictions are strong, and that's what makes America strong. Men have convictions about the Bible, and without that, you don't have anything. And you, of course, you don't agree with the other fellow on everything he holds about the Bible. If you did, you wouldn't be a freeman. You can't make the other fellow. If he's following everything you're following, he's nothing but a lackey. He's not a free man anymore. Well, anyway, this fellow, because he did that, I said, look, you've set yourself up for a win in a civil rights case, because you've proven by almost dying in a county jail that you ain't going to change. He said, no. I said, were you going to eat? He said, I would have died. No, I'm not going to take any benefit from the government. He said, none. Fascinating. I interviewed him on Patriot Soapbox. Come think, I need to call him again and talk to him again. People really like to hear him talk about his experiences, and I think that it would be good. I'm glad we thought about that. I need to get him on again. Well,
yeah, especially in these times, is a good example, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. There's so many. There's a Romanian girl out there. Well, she's a woman that came over here from. Her father was a preacher in Romania. He went to jail several times, and now they're over here. She's got a good job and raising a family, and I want to get her on and talk about her experiences. And, of course, what she says, and she came over here when she was 8, years old, but she said, you know, what I see here is what was going on in Romania. Well, shouldn't that scare us a little bit and say, wait a minute, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's that bad. Well, Gerard, back to you. Thank you much for
letting
me talk a little.
And I've had numerous people that came over from Europe tell me the same thing, that they see going on over here exactly what was when they left there, what they fled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a good wake-up call. Hey, I don't see a question and answer button on my meeting wall. I don't know if Jan or Terry or somebody can turn the question. There's no. Yeah, where is that button? I only have recording lock. Oh, there it is. Okay, it just highlighted. Okay, so if anybody has a question, get in the queue. I guess it wasn't on all this time. So I see Heather Lee is in there, so we'll start with her. Thank you, Brent, for your comments. It was very interesting. And I'll
do you want to do the sent-in questions, Gerard?
How many you got?
Four of them.
Well, I'll try. Okay.
Okay, now this first one here is one that we had come up a couple, 3 weeks ago that we thought Brent might like to make a comment on, and he wasn't there that night, so I'll bring that up since he just disappeared here. He should be still on the line. It says, an action at law is a case in law or equity, according to Amendment 10, and a proceeding in law and equity under Article 3. That would be federal subject matter jurisdiction. That means the enforcer or the service processor is a federal marshal, not a sheriff. See Article 3 of the Constitution. What you do is go into a federal court with a common law judgment to enforce. See 28 U.S.C. and 1738 and 39. The courts have told us that we must get that issue in front of the Supreme Court, and we'll try this month. Any comments on that?
Well, I wish maybe you could clarify for me. Any comments? Is there a question? It sounded like when I listened to you say all this, that it sounded to me like they were mixing up, not distinguishing between state and federal jurisdiction. The Constitution governs federal courts. In other words, when there's process served in your local county, it doesn't make any difference what the case is, though, federal or state. The process server is supposed to be somebody other than the party, the complainant in the action. And by the way, in general, in America, when we say action, I'm going to bring an action in court, that's an action at law. That means an action at common law. When you say you're going to bring suit, to be technical, suit is a suit in equity. But now, that's mixed up, I know, and sometimes they say, oh, that's a lawsuit, and they're talking about a common law action. But equity and law are two different jurisdictions, have always been two different jurisdictions in our tradition, and they are here. And equity has no jury. As a general matter, has no jury. Equity is just the judge. There are all matters of trust in America and almost American courts. Matters of trust are matters of equity. For instance, family law, when you go into court for divorce or custody, well, that's a matter of equity. That you don't get a jury, except in Texas, they say you do. And then also, matters of estates and trust, probate, that's a matter of equity. That's not a matter of law. The law is very rough compared to equity. Equity is, well, it's in the past it's been arbitrary. You remember me talking about arbitrary acts. The imperious breath of the judge does anything he wants. That's equity. Law cranks things down a little tighter, and it's a little rougher. But I'm not sure that if there's a question in all of that, I didn't understand what it was. And when at the end, when you said, you were reading, I know, you said, we need to address this court and it's something that needs to be decided. I was not able to discern. I'm slow on the uptake, it seems to me. Maybe I'm thinking too much. But I didn't seem to understand what it was that needed to be resolved in the courts. And maybe you caught it, Gerard. Or...
Well, the other thing he says is that the enforcer needs to be a marshal, not a sheriff.
I think he's
cutting, you know, too close, getting too technical. And as far, I don't know that I agree with that, or that that's even a fact. That, like you said, it has to be a third party. It doesn't have to be a sheriff. I mean, but he said the enforcer. Now, the sheriff does enforce judgments of the court. We know that, right? He would, if the court puts a subpoena or an arrest warrant, the sheriff will enforce that. So I don't know what he's saying. If it's a federal issue, then I guess the marshal is the enforcer. I don't know. They couldn't use the sheriff.
Well, let's put it this way. Traditionally, at common law, and this is true throughout our state courts, the sheriff is the one that provides, by his authority, deputies and bailiffs to give security to the county courthouse and to bailiffs to give security in the courtroom. That's the sheriff's job, and that's an ancient responsibility, been around for centuries. But in the federal courts, it's the U.S. Marshals that provide that same function. And when you go to federal court, there'll be U.S. Marshals in there just standing around looking tough, just like the sheriff's deputies are in the county courts. So it's analogous in that way. And, of course, U.S. Marshals are presidential appointments. They have a lot of functions. They also are charged with taking the U.S. Census every 10 years. But sheriffs, this is something we talked about last week at the sheriff's class, or last Thursday morning. Sheriffs are not somebody that any U.S. Marshal can command or commandeer, or anybody in the federal government. No one in the federal government has authority under the arrangement of our Constitution of between the states and the federal government. No federal officer or employee has any authority to commandeer a sheriff, or for that fact, any officer, office holder, or employee of state government. And that's saying a lot. That means everybody in the state government. That means everybody in the county governments, everybody in the city governments of the state, whatever state it is, employees of cities, even villages. No federal officer or official office holder has any authority to command anybody. That's the Prinz case. That's the Sheriff Richard Mack case from Graham County, Arizona. That was Justice Scalia writing in the Prinz case, and that was the subject of our sheriff's class last time. And Sheriff Darr, I'm just pleased all the pieces that he agreed to come on, because I'll say a few things, just like I'm talking now. Then I'll stop every 5 minutes or so, and then I'll say, Sheriff Darr, you got anything you want to add? Well, he comes across with stuff I never thought of. Of course, the reason is he's boots on the ground. He's boots on the ground, and he's been boots on the ground now for over 20 years in his county. You can't help but know a lot of practical stuff. And that brings out the practicum, the true laboratory-tested reality of the matter. And he likes to study. I'm glad to have him there just giving comments. That's really the value of it. It's, I can set the stage, but I can't. And our common law is a law of practicality. It's not the law of the library. It's not the law of the dusty cloister. It's the law of practice. A common law is what you do. It's not something you get out of a book. You can get some major maxims and some fundamental guidance, and you need to do that. But then you can't really, you can learn about our common law. You can know about our common law by looking at the books. That's where you got to start. But you can't know our common law unless you do it. So, if there's something there that I missed and somebody can clarify to me what was being said, maybe I need to hear it. It takes me about 7 times to hear something before it's etched into my hard brain. But once it gets etched in there, it'll stay generally. But if somebody else understands more about what those comments that were made, maybe I didn't hit the nail on the head, is what I'm saying, Gerard.
Okay, well, I didn't do any better because I didn't really know what he was looking for.
Okay.
He seemed to have a way to bring it into federal court, you know, as if you were fighting the state and he was going to bring it under Article 3. I didn't quite understand everything. Okay. I'd probably have to read it, like you said, seven more times to make hash out of it. But I know there was a, you know, that he mentioned that the marshal was the enforcer, and that seemed to be one of the big points he made, too. But I don't know. Maybe he wants to write it and clarify so we can maybe come up
with that. Yeah, and I invite people to do that when I can't understand. Try it again and say, no, Brent, you bonehead, here's what I was talking about.
Right.
Go ahead and do that, yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, Jan, what's the next victim here?
It's less controversial, I guess. Joe Biden implemented a plan for all government employees to be vaccinated, including military. Government officials seems to acknowledge himself, herself, exempt from taking the vaccine. Mandates aren't laws. Therefore, isn't this unconstitutional and or against individual constitutional rights? Can employers mandate employees to take an experimental vaccine without being liable for death and or damages? It seems more deaths are occurring from fully vaccinated people. Even the doctor who invented the mRNA in the vaccine stated that the COVID-19 vaccine wasn't safe.
Well, we kind of discussed that already, what I believe on that. And it absolutely is unconstitutional. And it is funny that they're exempting themselves. Isn't that funny? That federal workers are exempt from this thing that they're going to force us to, maybe even put us in FEMA camps, because we're the unvaccinated, you know, are the ones that are spreading this thing. I mean, isn't that a lie from hell? I mean, there's never been another time in history where you could walk down the street with no symptoms and they run this machine on you and it goes, you're sick. I mean, you go to the doctor, how does he know when you're sick? He asks you what your symptoms are. You know, he doesn't do a battery of tests and see which ones you fail and they say, oh, well, you got this or you got that. Because if something gets into you, whether you believe a virus is alive or not, a virus might just be a poison for all we know. But it nevertheless, it makes symptoms in the body and the body tries to rid itself of it. And as it's ridding itself, it elicits symptoms. I studied homeopathy for years, and in homeopathy, you work totally on the symptoms. And we don't care what causes it. We know what can cause it. What type of compound will cause that symptom, will cure that symptom. That's very simplistic way of talking about homeopathy. And Hahnemann discovered that with quinine, because they used to give quinine for malaria, and they didn't know why it worked, and they said, oh, it's bitterness, it's this. Well, he decided to start taking it one day just to see what it would do. And when he took it, and he diluted it, and he potentized it, which means he succussed it, which releases the energy of it, because he had certain knowledge in chemistry and how to deal with compounds. Well, what happened is he discovered that if you take enough diluted and potentized quinine, you would get all the symptoms of malaria, never getting bitten by a mosquito. And the minute you stopped taking it, it would go away. And then he discovered that he could do that with other compounds. So anything that causes symptoms in the body, if you dilute it and potentize it, it heals it. Now, we don't know exactly how that works, but it has been proven time and time again, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to get in that big, long discussion. I went off the rails on that one. But definitely, you know, I don't believe that they can require this because of, like he said, it's experimental. And they're not giving you even – they're not even telling you the ingredients. How can a government or anybody tell you that you got to put some secret ingredient in your body? I mean, you talk about – that's a religion. That's a cult. You're going to put this secret ingredient. We're not going to tell you what it is, but you have to take it. And guess what? It doesn't stop it. You still have to wear a mask. And you can infect other people, but yet we can come out and say anybody who didn't get the vaccine is spreading the disease. I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. It doesn't make any common sense at all. And I would do like what you say, Brent. I would stand on my convictions.
Mm-hmm.
because they don't have a leg to stand on.
No, and the majority is generally always wrong, always has been, and you don't run with the crowd. You do what's right and make them follow you, and they will. No, not make them. They will. They'll follow right. you if you'll stand tight. There will be those who will follow you. Be a leader. Yeah, to be a leader, you don't have to beat people down and make them follow you. All you have to do is march to the beat of your own drum, and people will follow you. You know, they used to say out in California back in the 60s and 70s, if you put on a bathrobe and walk down the beach at Huntington Beach with a sign that said, I'm Jesus Christ or I'm Moses, you'd have 50 followers in half an hour. And it was true back in those days. Well, people are looking for somebody who they believe, for right or wrong, who they believe has the conviction that they're right, and they will follow them. Make sure you're a person who is right. Make sure you're a person who is right in your conviction, and just stand fast and say, no, I ain't going there. You can go right on ahead. I'm not going. You can go right over the cliff if that's what you want to do. I don't want you to do that. I'm not going. Just like your mother maybe used to say to you, don't run with the crowd. They're all going to hell. Don't do it. Stand on your own convictions. Do your own thing. When I left home, I remember riding with my mother's father, my granddad, in the pickup truck. He went over to the hard way to feed the cows. He'd stop and pick me up. He'd been doing it since I was a little tiny boy. Well, here I was grown. For the last time I got in the truck with him, I didn't know it was the last time, but it was. And I was sitting beside him, and he took his bony fingers, and he was one of eight children. They called him the runt. He was the smallest one in the bunch. But he took his bony fingers and bony hand, and he slapped me on the leg, and he gave me a hog bite, and he said, Brent, you're leaving. Whatever you do, be your own man. I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. Sounded good. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'll do that, Granddad. Not until 20, 30, 40, now it's 50 years. How many years has it been? It's been 50 years, maybe, pretty near. And now I understand. I understand in a way I didn't have a clue. I'm so glad he said it, because it did get me thinking about it. And when the idea popped up again, I began to work on it. If he hadn't said that to me, I don't know that I would have as much. And I'm saying it to you, no matter how old you are, God's the biggest junk dealer in the universe. He'll take you no matter who you are. And he'll buff you up, and he'll set you on solid ground, and he'll make you a testimony to other people that will help them. Help them be right-headed, do right. They got to have an example. I have to have an example of somebody that's doing right before I recognize it. Be that example for other people. Stand on your own two feet. Be your own man. Be your own woman. Do what God said. What does God say? He says your body is the temple. That means the dwelling place, the shrine of the gumption breath of God himself, the person of the Holy Spirit, as they call him. That's the your body. Don't fill your body with opiates. That crowds God in your body. Him like that. Don't be getting drunk. Oh, it's all right. You want to have a little cheer, but don't be a darn drunk. That crowds God inside of your body. And don't be letting Joe Biden tell you what to inject into your body. Why? Because your body is the temple of God himself, the person of the Godhead, called the Spirit of God. And he does have personality. The Bible makes that clear. He's a person. And so don't do that. And young people need you. They are lost. They need you. Even if you're a young person, or if you're older than a young person, stand up and just say, well, just quietly. It doesn't mean you have to fight. Jesus Christ, Paul the Apostle, speaking as an apostle, said, having done all, stand. Having done all, figured out what you can figure it out. Like Davy Crockett used to say, he was famous for saying this, be sure you're right. Then go ahead. Just be sure you're right. Having done all, stand. Just stand. Don't budge. Don't give up the territory. Well, back to you, Gerard. Oh, by the way, Gerard, one other thing I want to mention. And I know what this person meant when they sent their question in or said what they said. We talk about constitutional rights. I'm on a campaign to get us to say not constitutional rights, but constitutionally protected rights, because our rights are not from the Constitution. That makes it sound like they're from the Constitution. They are from God, our Maker, the one that made us, and they're the Constitution then. We, the people of the United States, have put the Constitution in place, and we have recognized that we should protect these rights because they're what God gave us. And government has no right to interfere. And my religion, my response, my religare, my response back to my God is that I don't want anybody to inject something into my body that would crowd or grieve the Spirit of God in my body. I don't want that. And also, I don't want to grieve other people and see them in greater grief too, because they've been foolish and stupid and didn't just say no. Be a free man. Be a free woman. And if you believe it's wrong, say no. And I talked to a lady not long ago, Gerard, an old friend. I and her husband passed away. She was a client. We went through a lot together in the sense that she, well, ended up losing a lot of, well, her husband passed away out of grief over what happened. Then she was kind of, well, by herself and felt a little bit lost. And I could tell she was wavering about the jab. And that ain't like her. That was never like her to be that way. She was right-headed, but all of a sudden she's off kilter. People like that need encouragement. And if I get like that, I need encouragement. So I'm looking for friends that are of like kindred spirit. And that's we'll get here on Monday nights, and you hope you can listen to people of like kindred spirit. And that's why when I'm able to come, I like to come. Back to you, Gerard.
Thank you, Brent. Okay, Jan.
Okay, we have
where
a couple more. I will be on the Solano County Republican Central Committee agenda in 2 weeks to request volunteers for the Committee of Safety for Solano County, California. I will follow the guidelines in the handbook. Since I don't have a consultant or someone on the sidelines rooting for me to oversee how the process is going or to answer last-minute questions, I'm just throwing this out there just in case someone has any advice or pointers for me. This is a one-time opportunity, and I don't want to mess it up.
The pressure's on.
Help.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. You know, he's got to get a couple of friends, all I could tell him, you know.
That would help.
Yeah. It's hard when you're out there alone and you're standing in front of that cat. Look, if there's one thing I've learned about politics and law, you don't want to go alone if you can help it. I mean, look, we've proven that with our court watcher system. When you have to go to court, and if you can get 1, 2, 3, 5, if you can get 10 people, forget about it, they start getting very intimidated. So that's a good lesson right there for that. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it alone, but if you're going to do it alone, you have to be very articulate, and you have to be eloquent, and there's a lot of requirements for you to hold up that whole thing by yourself. And so I don't, you know, look at, maybe you don't want to go to the county commissioners, although it's coming up right away, before you appeal to some other people, you know, either at the diner or in the bar or wherever you meet people, and get yourself 3 or 4 people, because you're more formidable. And you could share the floor that way, and it takes some of the pressure off of you. But if you think you can pull it off alone, I mean, I'm not telling you not to try it. I'm just telling you that you're at a certain disadvantage standing there alone, especially if they decide to become adversarial and needle you. You have to be on your game where you can answer them and give them really good answers, you know, that will disarm them. That's the best advice I can give you. So you got to be really polished on your fundamentals and what you're trying to get across with this, you know, and don't be surprised if they try to make you look like a radical terrorist, because that's where they go with this, you know. Just remind them And today, I think you get this carries more weight than it did a few years ago. Just remind them that every one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence was on a committee of safety. So that kind of gives you that, you know, you're in good company there, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But other than that, I would advise you to try to get other people to go there so you're not singled out. I mean, even if they don't talk, if they're just, you come in with them and they're sitting there with you, you know, to show that you have, you know, you have a certain following. And that's what those politicians understand, and that's what they respect. We became committee men because we acted like committee men, and the politicians were afraid that they were going to lose too many votes if they didn't come out and talk to us and pay attention to us. So we became committee men by attrition, by acting like committee men and offering to carry their petitions and stuff. So, you know, it's, you know, what does John say? He says, think free, act free, be free. So, anyway, that's the best advice I can give you.
Right.
Who's that?
Francine, can you hear me?
Yes.
What I like to tell people when they talk about the founders served on the Committees of Safety, I always mm-hmm. tell them that Paul Revere was on the Committee of Safety, and everybody knows what Paul Revere did.
Right. There you go. That's a good one. So you just gave me more credibility. That's a good idea, and that's what this Monday night is about, where we can exchange ideas and grow. Anyway, I guess that's the answer to that.
Yeah. Okay, last one, and I think this is a John question. It says, I purchased 4 hard copies of the book, but I personally am having an issue with 10 point. Would it be possible to purchase a licensed copy of the book so that I can read it on my computer screen, which is much larger?
Well, they want a digital copy?
Yeah. In other words, they can throw it up on a computer screen. That's what I do.
Yeah, I don't. That is a John question. I wouldn't even know.
Is John still with us? He shows us being on.
He's snoring. Can't you hear him?
Yeah, I guess.
It's past his bedtime.
Yep.
Anyway, boy, last week I felt like every hour was past my bedtime. I was in such bad shape. But anyway. That's the last one. I got Heather Lee. I'm going to take her. Well, we still got a few minutes.
Yep.
Heather Lee, you are on. Or did we put you to sleep?
She's sleeping.
Yeah, she didn't think we'd ever get to her, probably. She's been in there a long time, going once, going twice. I don't think she's hearing me. Well, we got somebody else that just came in. Anyway, I'm gonna leave Heather Lee there, and I'm gonna open Robert Gorman. You're unmuted. Go ahead, Robert.
Yes, Gerard.
Yes.
A couple 3 weeks ago, I spoke to you about a Bible verse, and I gave you the wrong Bible verse. So I'm calling to correct the Bible verse. Okay.
Okay.
I gave you, I think it was 1st or 2nd Kings chapter 17, verse 42, about King David being a ruddy man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that. It's 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 42. You will see that. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, 1 Samuel.
Chapter 17.
17, verse 42.
Yes, you will see that he had the fight with Goliath, and Goliath was a non-white man. He says right there he's a dog. And King David was a ruddy man. He blushes red. And here's what Nathan the prophet said. He told David before he died, he says, your seed, your bloodline throughout all the ages coming down through is going to be the king on earth, the kingdom of heaven on earth. And he also has to be the same ruddy man. So it's very interesting how they have so much hatred toward the ruddy race. What are they going to do? Because the king is coming. He is going to be a ruddy man. That's all I want to say for the evening, Gerard. It's very interesting.
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert. I'll check that out.
Yes.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay, we got Gary. Go ahead, Gary. You've been unmuted.
Yeah. In reference to the previous caller, or the one before this guy, they do have a Kindle version.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. So then he could read it. He could read it any font he wants on Kindle.
I would think so.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. That's good information. Thank you.
I yield.
Okay. I got Michael from Michigan. You're next. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Mike from Michigan. I just have a comment about when you're talking about the vaccines and the whole COVID thing. Can't we just simplify this as that a mere man doesn't have the jurisdictional authority granted to him to interrupt my natural being, being a living being created by my God. So it doesn't make no difference what the vaccine is or isn't. They don't have the authority to have them do something against your consent, period.
Well, actually, Brent did go over that, and he talked about executive orders and who they apply to or how they apply, and they don't apply to us.
Yes.
They absolutely do not. He doesn't have the jurisdiction to do that. And I don't even believe that he has jurisdiction over the places that he has jurisdiction, like the executive, like if you're in that administration, let's say. This thing goes beyond that because it's an unalienable right, which he has no control over. That's from God. And, you know, just because he comes out with an edict, you know, when it's something that violates the fundamental rights that come from only from God, he obviously does not have that jurisdiction.
That was clearly covered with the statement of the Constitution. The Constitution does what? Protects our rights. The rights are not from the Constitution.
Right. They're certainly not from Joe Biden either. So he's way, way down on the totem pole. You know?
I don't know how he has the energy to give an executive order. Anyway, that sheriff's meeting, I haven't been on that yet. Can I get the information on commonlawyer.com?
Yes.
So the number for that Eastern Standard Time, what time was that?
I think it's 11 a.m.
11 o'clock. Oh, you're still there, Brent?
Still here. 11
and, o'clock. It's recorded. So if for some reason you can't make it, like I haven't been able to, you can listen to it later.
But I thank you, Brent, for making that distinction because I mean, it's crystal clear that what you're speaking about, the Constitution protects our rights. The rights do not come from the Constitution, but come from our Maker. I mean, I never used the Constitution in the context or thought of it that it protects our rights. I'm well aware that we as a people ordained and established.
Mm-hmm. You know, then little changes like that, putting an LLY on the end of constitutionally protected is an important distinction. And our courts have done in America, our Supreme Court and federal appellate courts have done a pretty good job over the decades of constantly using that phrase, constitutionally protected rights. They don't call them constitutional rights. And we're the ones that have made that mistake, and then it gets to be a habit, and then next thing you know, we start believing what we're saying, and that's the danger of using the wrong words. Of course, words have meanings, and if you lose the meanings of words, somebody famous said, if you lose the meanings of words, you lose your life, your liberty, and your property. So let's be persnickety. God has chosen to communicate and to squat, condescend to us to speak in the languages of men to communicate his truth to us, and he's been very precise about it. And he tells us to be precise, and Jesus Christ and Paul the Apostle both give us good examples of distinguishing between plural and singular, between past and present, and the words themselves. It's an important principle that we go slow and we contemplate our words and we use them as accurately as God gives us the discipline and ability to do. We all fall short, but he wants us to strive. You know, the old timers used to write long books, the old Puritans, the people that founded the country, essentially, and they used to write long books, and they got to titling all their books with the same phrase at the beginning, the pursuit of. And then they had one phrase they used constantly that encompassed all of it, and they'd constantly say the pursuit of excellence, because knowing that men are limited, men are mortal, they said, we're not God, but God wants us to pursue the things he wants us to pursue. As the heart panteth after the water brook, writes David, as the heart panteth after the water brook, so my soul panteth after thee, O God. Well, that's pursuing God. And they also said that. We must pursue God. Well, what does that mean? That means we pursue his will. Well, what's his will? Well, the will of the sovereign is law. It's the way things are, and it ain't going to change. And his will never changes. So he asked us to pursue excellence and pursue that. And I like to just use the word chase. Hunt, H-U-N-T. There's another good one. Just hunt it down. Like you'd hunt down a wild critter if you were a hunter. Well, anyway, thanks for bringing that up. But that's 8 o'clock West Coast time, 11 o'clock East Coast time, 9 o'clock Rocky Mountain, 10 o'clock Central on Thursday mornings. And the specs and the explanations and the description of the course. One thing I do want to post, I don't think I've done yet. I want to post the, maybe it's there, I'll have to look, the outline. We have an outline. We've laid it out for the 12 weeks, what we want to talk about, and it's all there. Or if it isn't there, I'm going to get it there. I'll do that tonight, Lord willing, if I can stay up long enough. Well, thanks for bringing that up, though. Appreciate it.
And if I could just add one more thing here. I love the analogy that you made, Brent, about God's a junk dealer, because God works with me.
Hey, listen, I don't say anything that I haven't heard somebody else say at some point. And I remember who said that. That was
I don't know if that was first. I didn't know if that was your original, but that'd be great.
Yeah, no. Well, he who never quotes is never quoted, so I just keep quoting. People think that I'm smart or something. But that was the first radio Bible teacher of any significance in America was Donald Gray Barnhouse. Donald Gray Barnhouse. And that was one of his favorite lines. God's the biggest junk dealer in the universe. And if you can make a wet place on a piece of glass, you're in the now generation, he would say. Well, that's right. Anyway, back to you.
So that's another phrase designed to make my toes curl. It used to be when everybody come on and said, our democracy, it's this and that for our democracy. It's a republic, a constitutional republic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they all say democracy. And so now the new thing that curls my toes is when they say, you know, my constitutional rights, you know, instead of my constitutionally protected rights, my inalienable rights. I try to say my inalienable rights, so it keeps me away from that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Well, I think the word democracy is a great word, but when I have 11 of my 12 neighbors come over to my house and say, why did you take that teaspoon of dirt from your backyard? What are you doing? You can't do that. Democracy.
Right. Anyway.
All right.
Okay,
all right. Good night, guys.
Good night. I'm going to catch Michael from Michigan before in the last few minutes here.
Hi, I'm back.
Who's that?
I'm back. This is Mike from Michigan.
Oh, hi.
I've been talking to you.
Oh, okay. So you just didn't get out of the queue. So we're empty then. That's it. You're the last one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I kind of figured you were. That's why I enjoyed it.
I guess it's a good night. Hi, I'm back. It's been a good night. I got lost. Anyway, yeah. Thanks a lot. And I'm going to go ahead and close it out since nobody else is coming in. It's a good meeting. Thank you, everybody. Make sure you show up next week, same time, same station. God bless.
Blessing. Good night.
Yep. Good night.